It's kind of wild, isn't it? This John 21, it's almost like it got tacked on. Because if you look at verse 31 of chapter 20, you know, these things were written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. And it's almost like John said, whoops, I forgot something. I need to fix something. I need to resolve something. So just after he has told us about Jesus dying for our sin, just after he told us how Jesus was brutally abused and tortured and put on a Roman cross, how he volunteered for that mission, and how he told us that sin is fatal. And therefore, the only way that sin can be dealt with, the only way that any lost sinner can ever be made right with God, is by putting their faith in Jesus Christ. Because the wage of sin is death, it's fatal. Jesus became the fatality so that we might have life. He tells us all of this. He paid the price with his own life, but then he rose from the dead, and that's what chapter 20 was all about. He resurrected from the dead in a new body to go out and prove to the world that he was and is the Son of God. And so he showed us that there is life after death. He showed us that when we walk through the door of death, there's something on the other side, and he came back to tell us that. He proved it, literally. And he revealed himself to the world that he was truly the Son of God. Now listen, if Jesus would not have returned or resurrected from the dead, he would have been just another rabbi that they would go and visit his tomb. There are many of them in Israel. You can go see him for yourself. But Jesus made sure that he would give them living proof so that the Jews would know that he raised from the dead, that he is the Messiah. The Romans would know, and especially for us as Christians, that we would know. Although, for the Christian, there's no doubt in my mind because I know he's alive, he's living in me, he's living in you. But what's amazing is Dr. Luke, in the book of Acts, he recorded this to make sure that everyone knew that Jesus literally, physically walked around the face of the earth after they took his lifeless body from a cross, put it in a tomb, rolled the stone in front of it. They showed and proved that he was walking around. Listen to what Dr. Luke said in chapter 1. In my first book, I told you, Theophilus, about everything Jesus began to do and teach until the day that he was taken up to heaven after giving his chosen apostles further instructions through the Holy Spirit. During the 40 days after his crucifixion, he appeared to the disciples from time to time, and he proved to them in many ways that he was actually alive, and he talked to them about the kingdom of God. And Dr. Luke recorded it because he talked to eyewitnesses. Luke also probably told Paul, because Paul would also record that in 1 Corinthians when he said he was talking about how Jesus was seen by many witnesses. He even said he was seen by Cephas or Peter, then by the 12, and after that he was seen by over 500 people at one time who, the greater part of them remain to the present. Paul talked to live eyewitnesses and said, oh, I saw him. He was here. I know he raised from the dead. So physical eyewitness proof of this. Jesus defeated death. He defeated Satan. He paid for sin. He did it all for one reason, because he loves you so much. He said, there's no other way to fix this relationship. I have to do it. I willingly do it. I surrender to it because I want to fix the relationship. Amazing what he did. Well, we learn something, and I believe that's why John added this on. Peter had blown it big time. Remember this story? Peter had muffed it big time. He denied Jesus how many times? Three times. Don't forget that. Three times. And then a rooster crowed, something he'll never forget. And so, but Jesus told Peter, you're going to be sifted like wheat, but listen, when you have returned, I want you to encourage or strengthen your brothers. So he wasn't finished with him yet. And so Mark records an interesting truth that none of the other gospel writers tell us, which I find to be interesting. Sorry, you guys. Mark said in chapter 16, listen, an angel was standing at the tomb. The two Marys come. And listen to what Mark records that was said. You go tell the disciples, listen to these two words, and Peter. make sure you tell Peter, make sure you don't leave him out, that he is going before you into Galilee, and there you will see him. There you're going to see Jesus, just like he said to you. So make sure that you don't leave Peter out of this. Why? Because Peter needs to be restored. So let's take a look at chapter 21. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm losing it here. Anybody got a... Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Ricola. Let's start reading. After these things, of kind of a favorite word or a phrase of John's, metatauta in the Greek, he uses that many times in the book of Revelation. Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. Now you might maybe wondering, what's the Sea of Tiberias? Sea of Galilee. But if you've been to Israel, you know this, that wherever you live, if you live on a city that or a town that backs up or joins to the Sea of Galilee, it's yours. So if you live in Tiberias, it's the Sea of Tiberias. You live in Capernaum, it's the Sea of Capernaum. You see what I'm saying? So somebody's got to hook me up or I'm not going to make it. Simon, who's got one? Thank you. Thank you, Carl. You man, you're the man. You saved me. Nice shirt. See how things are around here? Okay. Thank you. I don't know what's going on. So, where are we? We're verse 1. Verse 2. Simon Peter called, he showed himself to these men. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were there together. Interesting, they're not named. I wonder why. Maybe it's because you can put your name in there and Jesus will show himself to you. So Simon Peter said to them, you know what, guys, I'm going fishing. And they said to him, well, we're going with you then. And they went out and immediately got into the boat. And that night they caught how much? But when the morning had now come, let that sink in for a minute. What time would that be? Early in the morning. In fact, if you're reading out of the New Living, it says at dawn. So how early is dawn? That's early. When should you do your devotions? Early. Thank you. Very good. Jesus stood on the shore, yet his disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said to them, children, have you any food? They answered him, no. Let's stop there for just a second. This is an amazing section. Sometime after Jesus had resurrected from the dead, he had left the disciples a little confused. It's interesting. He's appearing all over at various locations all around Jerusalem. Literally, he appears and disappears. He appears in a room. In his resurrected body, he had the ability to just... And he's there in a closed room, you know. And then he disappears. He appears with two guys on the road to Emmaus. Disappears from their sight from a closed door room. He appears in the upper room. So Jesus is appearing and disappearing, but yet, and he's met with the disciples, but he hasn't given them any of their final directions. He hasn't given them their instructions for the future. So they're kind of a little bit uncertain. He's going to be leaving soon, and he will give them directions, but he hasn't done that yet. And at one of those moments, when Jesus kind of seems distant to his disciples, they're saying, have you guys seen him? I haven't seen him for a while. I find that kind of fascinating. That this, at one of those moments, the boys decide, well, we haven't seen him. Well, let's go to the beach. And let me tell you, the Sea of Galilee is gorgeous. They decide, and that's where most of these guys are from anyway. And so they're standing at the beach, and Peter says, you know what, let's go fishing. So they hop in a boat. The other guys say, yeah, we'll go with you. So now some commentators and some Bible scholars say that, oh, see, it was laziness. Some say, well, you know what happened? They were being disobedient. Others will say, wait a minute, Jesus said meet me on a mountain, and here they are at the lake. What's up with that? Some will say that it was just simple cluelessness. They were clueless. They didn't have an idea what was going on. Some say that maybe it was a distraction. I kind of lean that direction myself. I'll show you why. So maybe they were wondering, as sometimes us men do. It's been a few years since they put out in a boat and tried to go fishing. Maybe they were wondering, do we still have it or not? Whatever the reason being, I don't know what it is, but no matter, Jesus shows up. Now think this through. He can appear and disappear wherever he wants to appear and disappear. Wouldn't it have been trippy if he would have appeared in the boat? All of a sudden, hey guys, what are you doing? And, I mean, they probably would have freaked out and jumped in the water, but they didn't. And instead, Jesus shows up on the shore. Now look what it said in verse 1. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples. Did you catch that word again? So that literally could mean that he showed himself again to the disciples. Pretty deep. I know what you're thinking. Whoa, that's hefty. Or could it be that he showed himself to them again in a way that he had showed himself before? Think this through for a moment. He's about ready to teach them something radical. He could have showed up in the boat. He could have done that, but instead he does something different. Remember what happened back in Luke chapter 5 when Jesus is up on the Sea of Galilee. He's teaching the disciples. He's teaching a crowd. He gets into Peter's boat, and he teaches for a little while, and he says, why don't you go ahead and just put out to the down to the middle of the lake? And he goes, cast your nets, plural, into the water, and let's see what you can catch. And Peter says, listen, I've been fishing all night, haven't caught anything. And he goes, I'm the fisherman, you're the rabbi, let me take care of it. And he says, well, but nevertheless, at your word, and listen, he says, at your word, I will cast the net, singular. Okay, to humor you, I'll throw a net in. And what do we read? The net, he starts to pull it back in, and it was so full of so many fish, he couldn't catch it himself. He couldn't pull it in all by himself, because they didn't just use fishing lines. They throw in these circular nets. It's pretty cool to watch them, if you've ever seen it. They throw out a circular net, goes in, they draw it up like this. It was so full, the nets were breaking. Peter got his mind blown right there, because at that particular moment, Simon Peter saw it. He falls down on his knees and he says, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. From that point forward, he followed him. Jesus said, you follow me, I'll make you a fisher of men. Here again, we see the same miracle take place. Very similar. Few differences. The net doesn't break this time. And the rest of the disciples are with him. So, but what I love about this, there's no rebuking them of whatever perceived ideas they may have had. He doesn't, you know, rebuke them. He doesn't say, hey, backsliders, what are you doing out there? He doesn't say, hey, slackers. He, you know, no chastising. In fact, I love what he does. Hey, children. That's like a term of affection, like a term of friendship. You guys catch anything? Let me translate it kind of maybe into Rob's speech. Hey, my little brothers. Is that you guys out there? What are you guys doing? Is that what you want? You want to go back to fishing for fish? Is that what you guys want to do? You want your old life back? Hey, I've changed you guys. I've given you a new life. I've given you a different life. Remember, you guys aren't the same guys you used to be. I wonder if that's more in line of what was going on. So watch what happens after they said, no, we haven't caught anything. And so he said to them, cast the net. And by the way, he's going to give them five instructions that if they follow these five instructions, they will get the great blessing because he loves to bless obedience. Look at number one. Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. Isn't that interesting? I mean, I've seen these boats. They have one on display over there, and it might be like maybe 6 feet from one side to the other. So put it on the right side instead of the left. So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. Therefore, remember who's writing this book? John. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment because he'd kind of stripped down to his shorts and he had removed it, and he plunged into the sea. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, about 200 cubits. That's probably like 100 yards, 200 yards maybe, dragging the net with the fish. Then, as soon as they had come to the land, they saw a fire of coals there and fish laid on it. And Jesus said to them, instruction number two, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. And Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to the land full of large fish. If you would, underline this, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. Isn't that interesting? 153. Why? It's like, how many did you catch? Oh, I don't know. But who's counting? Obviously, they were. So Jesus then gives them the next instructions. Come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? Knowing that it was the Lord. Well, Jesus then came and took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. I know what you're thinking. Ooh, sounds yummy, fish breakfast. But believe it or not, that's very Mediterranean. When we're in Israel, they have a lot of fish for breakfast. Some of you liked it. You know, many of our people loved it. I sat at a different table, but they loved it. So this is now the third time Jesus showed himself to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. So check this out. He loves to bless obedience. He loves it when we obey him. And these five very specific, we've got three of them right there, and we're going to get some more. But the first instruction, cast your net on the right side of the boat. Isn't that an interesting instruction? I mean, why the right side as opposed to the left side? Or can we say as opposed to the wrong side? Literally, here's what I think about this. Whatever side Jesus tells you to put it on, that's the right side. So that's where we'll leave it, right there. Well, they obey. What's interesting is they didn't know that it was Jesus at first. They just heard some guy on the shore saying, hey, throw it on the right side of the boat. And so they do, and they get blessed. And at that moment, they realize it's Jesus. See, they remembered back 3 years earlier when this same miracle had taken place. So their obedience brings great blessing, a catch so huge that they can't handle it alone. They have to work together to bring all the fish in, a true clue or a hint of what is yet to come for these guys. That the church is going to be birthed, people are going to be coming into the kingdom, so much so that they are going to have to work together. So very interesting kind of hidden messages Jesus is giving to them. John figures it out. He remembers what happened 3 years ago. He tells Peter it's Jesus. Peter jumps in, swims to the shore, and at least we see here that John doesn't jump in and beat Peter to the shore this time. But then he gives him the second instruction. Bring some of the fish you caught and add them to mine. So, in other words, I think this is a more. Not only is their obedience going to bring them blessing, these are clues of what is about ready to happen to them in the future. Anything you do must be added to mine. You have to bring the ones that you get to me. Bring them to me. If I will do the miracle, but you have to obey and bring them to me. I'm going to make you fishers of men, but you don't get to keep them. Bring them to me. You get the picture. Interestingly, we are told there's 153 fish. So you're probably wondering, Rob, why 153? Well, I didn't have a clue until we were in Israel one time, and Amir, our tour guide and friend of the ministry here, our fellowship, he said that he did some homework, did some research, and he found out that at the time of the Jews, when they would be fishing on the Sea of Galilee, check this out. There were 153 different species of fish in the Sea of Galilee. So then, if that be true, as I believe that it is, then Jesus was also sending them another radical message. Guys, you're going to be catching all kinds of different fish. People of every walk of life, people of every economic background, people of every color, people of every kind of city. Many different people are going to be coming into the kingdom. The third thing that he says is, come and eat breakfast. Now, I love the fact. Did I mention that it was early in the morning? Did I mention that? Okay. Jesus was waiting for them early in the morning with breakfast. Don't you love this? Now, you guys know I tease and I play, and I personally think the morning is the best time. But it doesn't matter what time it is. You can be saying, you know what, I'm going to hop in the car. I got to go down the hill. And so I'm gonna put in some praise, and I'm just going to worship Jesus. You know what, he'll be waiting for you in the car. If you get home and you say, you know what, I just want to, tonight I'm just going to tune everything out, turn everything off, and I just want to sit down and spend some time with Jesus, guess what, he'll be waiting for you. If you decide you're going to do your devotions early in the morning, which is the best time, he'll be waiting there for you, and he'll feed you breakfast. Isn't that amazing? He'll have it all prepared. Now, he prepares it is right here. He'll prepare his word. He'll prepare your heart. But we have to put in our part. We have to be willing to come to him. We have to be willing to dedicate that time. And when we do, he will be waiting to meet with you. That's beautiful. I love that particular picture. So Jesus is giving them an amazing picture. But what I love here also is what he doesn't say. Did you catch this? There's no lectures. He doesn't say, what were you guys doing in the boat? Give me the keys to the boat. You guys are done with the boat. Give me the keys. He doesn't do that. He doesn't start chastising them about, you know, going back to their old life or anything like that, even though they may have, but we really don't know. He doesn't look at Peter and say, hey, Peter, I told you I was going to make you a fisher of men, so you, leave the fish. No fish for you, boy. How would you like some chicken? He doesn't remind him of his the past few days, right? He doesn't leave him at that, okay? But what I do see is Jesus loving these guys, graciously, he's preparing them for what is yet to come. So here's some lessons that we can learn from this section so far. Take it from your pastor who, you know, listen, before I am your pastor, before I'm a pastor, I'm also a Christian, you know that. And so after walking with the Lord for a season of my life early on, I tried to go back to the world that I came from. And listen to me, there is nothing back there for you. There was nothing back there for me. I can tell you this, it always, always, listen to me very carefully. You try to go back, you will find what is there? Emptiness, nothingness, misery. You will not fit. I can tell you that. What happened? They fished all night, caught how much? Nothing. There's nothing back there for you. Just please trust me in that one. Secondly, when you try to go back, it usually, here's the scary part of it. What happened? Peter says, I'm going fishing. They said, we'll go with you. Sadly, if a person, if a Christian decides, I'm going to go back, unfortunately, many times, more often times than not, others follow them. And that's a sad indictment. And you don't want to be responsible for that either. I think another thing is that your senses will get dull. They were looking. They couldn't tell that it was Jesus. Do you know when you try to go back to your old life, you'll lose that sense of who Jesus is. He will come out of focus, so to speak. It will have a hard time recognizing him. But if and when we obey, our nets will be full. Our obedience will open our eyes to see who Jesus is, to see what he's doing. He will be waiting for you to come and spend time with him. And listen, 153 fish. God will use you to reach all different kinds of people. He will use you in ways that you never thought possible. There is not one person, if they are alive, they are not out of the grasp of Jesus if you'll make yourself available to him. Yesterday afternoon, I was with a crusty old biker. And I'm telling you, this guy, words were coming out of his mouth that were, we'll say, salty. And as usually does, the question of what do you do for a living came up. That's why I happen to be the pastor of Calvary Chapel Ramona. Really, really, really. And this guy, you know, had walked with the Lord at one time, and so I know God sent me there for a divine appointment. He was one of the 153, you guys. A guy that maybe somebody gave up on, a guy that went back to his old life, whatever it may be. And as we talked, it was very cool. It was amazing how quickly the salty language disappeared. But God will use you. No one, not one person that you are praying for, if they're alive, if you have a kid you're praying for, if you have a husband or a wife you're praying for, if you have some family member, somebody at work, no one is outside of the 153. He will save anyone as long as they're alive if you just keep being a witness. Well, it's time to turn to Peter. It's time for Peter to be restored. All the guys are on the shore. They're around a fire. They're enjoying some time with Jesus. And look what happens at verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And he said to him, well, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, here's instruction number four, and they come in a clump right here. Feed my lambs. And he said to him a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, all right, then tend my sheep. And he said to him a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he had said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him then, feed my sheep. Verse 18, most assuredly I say to you, when you were a youngster, you girded yourself and you walked where you wish. And when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. What does that mean? Verse 19, this he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. Real quick interlude. Jesus just got done telling Peter, listen, when you were a young guy, you did what you want. You were a self-made guy. You just, you know, whatever you wanted to do, Peter's the fisherman. He could get up and do what he wants to do. But listen, Peter, when you get old, someone is going to stretch out your arms and you're going to go where you don't wish. Do you know what that means? He was telling Peter right there, Peter, one of these days you're going to be crucified. And that's exactly what happened to Peter. Isn't that interesting? The only difference is, Peter, when it came time, he remembered these words. When Peter's arms were stretched out, they said, we're going to crucify you. And he says, no, you're not. Not like my Lord was crucified. And they said, we're going to crucify you. And he says, then crucify me upside down. And that's exactly what happened to Peter. Crucified upside down because he didn't think he was worthy to be crucified like Jesus was. So, notice the finish of this sentence. And when he had spoken this, he gives him his fifth and final instruction. Follow me. Then Peter, turning around, remember John wrote the book, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also had leaned on his breast at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? That would be John. Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Look at these three words. You follow me. Now, this saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. But Jesus didn't say to him that he wouldn't die. But if I will that you remain until I come, what is that to you? So rumors spread. Now, this disciple, John says, I tell you, I testify of these things. And wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. There are also many other things that Jesus did, which if they were written one by one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Amen, he says, so be it. So John ends his letter, but not before Peter gets restored. Jesus now, as he's been dealing with the disciples, he turns his attention to this broken down Peter man that was sitting there with him. And Peter, as you know, had taken many steps in his denial of Jesus. But listen, if you're here and you've walked away from the Lord, I want to promise you one thing. He's only one step, he's only one prayer away to being restoration. So in the Greek language, there are many different words for our one word because some play on words is taking place here that you need to understand. So I'm going to have you get your pencil ready, and I'll show it to you so you'll be able to explain this to someone on another time. several words for our one English word, love. The Greek has actually four or even five. Some believe there's the fifth word. So we can say, I could say to you, hey, I love my wife. I could say to you, I love my children. I could say to you, I love In-N-Out Burger. And you guys would say, really? I didn't know that. Someone would be able to say, I love my dog. And you better mean something different. My wife better know that I love her different than I love a double-double, right? Or you love your dog, but you better love your wife in a different way. We understand the meaning of the word love based upon the context that we use it in, right? So we know that each one means something different. But in the Greek language, several different words. For our study today, there's only two that I will explain to you. There's one word that is called phileo. Let me spell it for you. P-H-I-L-E-O. And what that is a word that means like brotherly friendship kind of love. We're really good friends. We're close friends. There's an affection, a tender affection between two people that have that word, phileo. It, by the way, it's where the word Philadelphia comes from. The city of what? Brotherly love. That's where it comes from, phileo. Then also, the second word that we will focus on today is agape, which is divine love that comes from the heart of God. It is love that is unconditional, no boundaries, and it is love that is self-sacrificing. But here's the deal. In order to experience that kind of love, you have to have a relationship with God because it is a love of the Spirit. So our spirit must be reunited with our soul. You must be born again in order to experience this love. If you're not born again, the best you could ever hope for is probably just phileo. That's the closest that you're ever going to get. So even for a Christian to experience agape, we have to be willing to die to our own selfishness and to our own human love to be able to experience this. But it is the ultimate of love. So the play on words is going on in this little conversation right here. So remember, Peter said, I will die for you in the Garden of Gethsemane. Lord, I'm ready to go. He pulls out his sword, hacks off Malchus's ear. See? Jesus has to say, Peter, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times. Never. That's not me. You got the wrong guy. These guys will, but not me. So Peter finds out before the evening is over that he can't even back those words up. So what happens right here? Notice there in verse 15, he says to him, Peter, do you love me? And he uses the word agape right there. Peter, do you agape me? Do you have self-sacrificing, unconditional, God-driven, God-motivated love for me like you said back in the garden? Back in the upper room? Peter, do you have that kind of love that you're willing to die for me? Remember, Peter denied him three times. He knows he's failed. He feels like a failure. But Jesus isn't done with him. He told him, I've given you the keys of the kingdom. You're going to use these keys. So do you love me? Do you have agape for me? And he used the word more than these. What were the these? We don't know. Is it like more than the fish, more than the boats, more than the Sea of Galilee, more than the other disciples? I'm not sure. But nonetheless, the love part of it. Do you love me? And Peter, you said you love me unconditionally. Well, do you still feel the same way? Peter answers with his head kind of hanging down, sitting there at that fire, which, by the way, this is the second fire Peter's warming himself at. This one will be one of restoration rather than denial. And Peter uses the word phileo in his response. And he says in verse 15, yes, Lord, you know that I phileo you. I love you like a good friend. I can't use the word agape. I can't do it. I said that in the upper room. I said it in the Garden of Gethsemane. I failed you miserably. I popped off, but I can't say it. Lord, I got nothing. I like you a lot. I like you as a friend. I popped off. I failed. So now I see I don't have what I thought I had. So I won't say the word. So, Jesus doesn't correct him. He doesn't rub anything in his face. He gives him instructions. Okay, then, I'm not done with you. I've got lambs out there that need to be fed. lambs or the tender little ones. I got little babies that are going to need to be fed here pretty soon. So then he does this three separate times. So let me ask you a question. How many times did Peter deny Jesus? So three times he asked him. Do you see what's happening? He's got the fisherman in his own net, bringing him back into the boat, bringing him back onto the shore with the rest of the disciples. The second time, do you agape? Lord, you know I phileo you. The third time right there, Jesus now lowers the standard and he says, do you phileo me, Peter? Do you love me like a friend? And at that point, Peter, with his head hanging down, it's almost like Jesus is saying, okay, buddy, that'll do for now. But more will be, more. There's more to come, you know. But wait, there's more, Peter. You'll see. And so Jesus telling Peter, I've got work for you to do. Sheep need to be tended, loved, led, and taught. Peter, there's going to be a large ingathering of sheep and little baby lambs that are going to need to be taken care of. I need you to do that. Peter, I know you love me, but I want you to stop trying to prove it to me, and I just want you to love with the love that I'm going to give it to you. An amazing picture for Peter. So that's the second time that we see Peter at this fire where he's being drawn in, a second fire now, warming his heart instead of warming his hands with the enemy. Jesus will now drive home a very, very important truth that I need you to catch this. I need you to get this principle. Jesus gets up. They're sitting around the fire. They're having a conversation. Jesus gets up, and he turns, and he starts to walk away, and he says, Peter, come on, I want you to follow me. Come with me. Peter gets up, and so I'm going to pretend that you guys are Jesus, okay? Can you do that for a moment? And I'll be Peter. So he says, come on, let's go for a walk. So Peter gets up. He starts to walk. Jesus and Peter are involved in a conversation. They're involved in something as they walk away from the rest of the group. Peter hears something behind him. He hears John rustling. Maybe it's the rustling of an old man that fished all night and caught nothing until the last minute. And he's going, getting up, probably like I do. And so Peter, now check this out, we're having a conversation. Peter hears John behind him, so he turns around and he says, but Lord, what about him? So let me ask you a question. The moment I turn around to look at John, who did I just lose my focus on? Jesus. Isn't that radical? He turns around to look at Peter. And he says, Lord, what about him? What about John? What's going to happen to him? How's he going to die? Whatever the question was, it really doesn't matter. It is the lesson that matters. And this is huge for Peter because you can almost see as he turns around, says, well, Lord, what about him? You can almost hear Jesus tapping him on the back of the head saying, hey, McFly. Turn around. The moment you just turn around, me and you just got lost here. Turn back around. I need your attention. I need you to turn back around here. Focus your attention upon me. Peter, I need you to get your attention back on me. And that's where he gets his last instruction. You follow me. He's not your problem. He's my problem. Peter, John's not your problem. You don't need to worry about John. He's my problem. I'll take care of John. You just do something. You follow me. That's it. All you need to do is follow me. Now, the Greek tense of that word means you start following and you keep following without stopping. Keep following me. So the last thing that John records, it's almost as if he adds this on to say, you know what, my buddy Peter needs to be vindicated. We need to see that he got restored. I want all to see that he was restored. And I would venture to say that every one of those disciples watched this thing go down. They heard Jesus. They watched him tap Peter on the shoulder and say, hey, turn back around over here. You focus on me. You follow me. I'll take care of John. I think that it's a radical thing that this restoration took place not by following a religious system. Jesus didn't give him one rule, one regulation. He didn't give him a set of doctrine. He didn't give him a religious system. He said, you focus on me. It's a person. It's a person. That's where our focus needs to be. Now, I shared with you that this was a radical one for me. As I've talked to you guys many times about the early years of Mari and I in our marriage, and we went through a really difficult season in our early days. And in that time, as we were figuring out what this thing called marriage was all about, and you guys know that marriage really does expose selfishness, and it really exposed it in me. And it was at that time, early on in our relationship, that I started saying, Lord, what about her? Lord, what about Mari? Lord, you what are you going to do with her? And I remember distinctly that little tap on the back of the head. Hey, Rob, turn around. This is where the Lord gave me this particular passage of John 21 that I've shared with many other people. Rob, she's not your problem. I take care of her. She's my girl. I got her. I'll take care of her. She's not for you to fix or change. I got her. When you're focused on her, Rob, then your focus is not on me. You're distracted. Rob, you follow me. So let me ask you a question, a couple questions. I've been married for 32 years. Anybody less than 32 years been married? Let me see your hand, okay? Anybody more than 32 years? Okay. Now then, here's what I have learned. And let me ask you a question. In all the years of your married life, have you been able to change your spouse? Be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume by the giggles that means no. Here's the deal. When we got married, I was sitting there saying, I got to change her. I got to fix her. And I found out you can't change someone else. Did you learn that yet? So listen to me. Let me see the hands of any singles here today. Let me see all of you that are single. Let me see your hands today. Don't be ashamed. I won't pick on you, I promise. Listen, do not get married. Wait, there's more to the sentence. There's more to the sentence. Okay. Do not get married to someone that you think, well, I really don't like this about her or about him, but it's okay. I'll fix it. I'll change him. If you feel that way about, if you're in a courtship with someone that you're thinking you need to fix him or change him, do yourself a favor. Either A, forget that, or B, end that relationship, find somebody else, because you are not going to change him. 32 years, I haven't changed her. She hasn't changed me. Now you guys understand, yes, I do put the dirty clothes in the basket now, little things like that. But I'm talking about overall, you know. There you go. All right. But overall, character issues of who I am and who she is, I haven't been able to change her. She hasn't changed me. So here's question two. If you can't change that person that you're with, who can you change yourself? Do you see this? Do you see why this is so important for us to understand this? Jesus says, listen to me, Rob. You don't try to change her. You follow me. And in all reality, we really don't even change ourselves. Did you know that? We learn to surrender to the Holy Spirit, and He changes us. And here's what's amazing, you guys. That as I began to say, okay, Lord, you change me. Now, it does require me to put forth the effort as He exposes and reveals things to me. Yes, then I need to make those changes. But He will then give you the power and the ability to make the changes that He's asking you to make. That's the beautiful part about being born in the kingdom of God. But here's what is radical. And listen to me, husbands. Listen to me, wives. And listen to me, singles. So that includes pretty much everybody here today. As I began to say, Lord, you change me. And He said, Rob, don't you worry about her. I got her. I watched God begin to change me. And as He changed me, listen, husbands, we are to love our wives as Christ loved the church. We are to set that example. I began to watch my wife follow my example. And pretty soon the changes that I tried to make in her but ended in failure, because I don't know about you guys, have you learned that when you try to change your wife by pointing out her flaws and failures, it really doesn't work that well? They don't really respond too good to that. But I watched her change as she watched me change. I watched God begin to do a work in her. Do you get the picture? This is why this principle is so very, very important for us. I don't care what it is you're focused on. If you're focused on your spouse, your kids, your work, your past, your future, anything that you are focusing on other than Jesus is a distraction. I believe that even if you're focused on yourself, I got to fix me. I got myself into this. By golly, I'll get myself out. I'll pull myself up by my own bootstraps. Do you realize that you're focusing on trying to change your flesh and you can't change that? That's why Paul would later on write, and I believe that Peter probably taught Paul this lesson, and in Galatians 5:16, you can write this down somewhere there in John 21, Paul says, I say then, walk in the Spirit and you will not satisfy the lust of the flesh. Notice he doesn't say, fix your flesh. He says, walk in the Spirit and the flesh gets taken care of. You see the difference? That's why Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said these words, seek ye the kingdom of heaven, and I'll take care of everything else. What are you focused on today? Who are you focused on? Where are you focused on? Right now you're thinking, you know what? I really don't care. I just want this to be over. Whatever you're focused on, can I suggest to you, would you focus on Jesus? What does that mean? It means pray to him. Talk to him. Be faithful in your devotions. Whatever time that is. Be faithful, be committed to do it. Spend time with him. Sing praise. He loves it. And it does the heart good. And hang out with other believers. And listen to me, don't try to change anyone. You start praying, Lord, change me, and watch what happens. Lord Jesus, we thank you so much for the power of your word and for the power of your Spirit. Lord, I don't know what we're focused on today. But I pray that today we would recognize and realize that our focus needs to be upon you. May we hear the words, you follow me. And may we be obedient to do just that. In Jesus' name, amen.